All right, a holiday Monday edition of the Fan Pregame. We're on for an hour of a little Olympic NBO chat. We're going to have Kate Van Buskirk of CBC join us in a moment after a busy day in Paris.
Yeah, the National Bank Open, of course, is underway. Toronto and Montreal. The tennis world was focused on Roland Garros for the last 10 days or so, but now it shifts to Canada and Montreal and Toronto. We'll have Ben Lewis of Tennis Canada on in about a half hour to discuss the big event.
I was at the MBO checking out the scene today at Toronto, York University, and just doing a little look around. I'm going to go to one of the games this week, or one of the week, I think the nighttime viewing session on the weekend, but it looks great. It's exciting.
I've never been, and I've got to get down there. I've never been to a tennis event, period.
Okay.
And I feel like I should rectify that
somehow.
It's awesome.
I'm going to go under the lights on one of the nights. It's just going to be great.
Okay.
Looking forward to it.
Have fun.
Yeah, so the vibe was set. I mean, things are starting up there, so we'll get the pulse from Ben Lewis. Talked about it being kind of a midway, just a little bit past the midway point of the Summer Olympics in Paris. And Canada just passed 17 medals in 11th place. They have 5 golds, 4 silvers, and 8 bronze. For historical context, the most we've ever won at a Summer Olympics was 44 medals, but that's pretty much an outlier. We went through and looked like 20-ish is kind of average. That was the 84 Los Angeles Olympics. Last Summer Olympics, for context, in Tokyo, we had 24. So we're at 17 medals with less than a week to play.
It feels like exactly where we should be. We are, 10th, 11th, 12th in total medals. That kind of feels appropriate. So it feels like we're pacing towards something that would be considered a success. But my very reductive take here after, 10, 11 days of Olympic action is that for Canada, success in these games hinges entirely on the success of the men's basketball team. And I say that because you look past the last couple Olympics, which have been the breakthrough ones in many ways for Canada, and there's some really strong pillar moments, some hallmark moments, some really, really lasting memories made. Yeah, hauling in a bunch of bronze, silver, gold medals, it's a lot of fun, and it makes for viewing in the summer very, very interesting. But I feel like we're short on those big moments. Of course, we have Summer McIntosh, but beyond that, I think it is lacking on the ones that everyone is sort of galvanized by, looking forward to experiencing as one. If you look back to 2020, we had the soccer gold, Damian Warner decathlon, Andre DeGrasse winning the 200 silver medal in the men's relay. Those were a bunch of like tent pole events that are lasting memories. And for these Olympics so far, I think we need one more of those. And the only means to get it, I think, is through the men's basketball team.
I won't completely agree with you on that. I think summer obviously has set apart this being the summer of summer. If she's around, she'll probably be the closing ceremony. She'll probably win the Northern Star Award. This is summer's year. She's leaving Paris with 3 golds and a silver, setting Olympic records on the way to doing that. And she's matching Penny for the most ever medals won by a Canadian athlete at one Summer Games. And she's the first Canadian to win 3 golds. So let's put summer in her own box, because she's going to be something we probably talk
about. She's tentpole A.
For the next couple Olympics, I hope it's summer. But there has been some really amazing, unique gold, silver, and bronze performances from the Canadians. I think that's why maybe it doesn't feel like the 200 meter did and the Canadian women winning gold in soccer. But fencing, we won our first ever Olympic medal in the sport with Eleanor Harvey. Tennis, Felix and Gabby just won a bronze in mixed doubles, which was our first ever Olympic medal in that sport. I mean, yesterday we were both watching the hammer throw with Ethan Katzberg, who won gold. It was 112 years since Canada last won a medal in the Olympic at the hammer throw at the Olympic Games. Judo, Krista Deguchi won Canada's first gold medal at this Olympics there, and that was our first ever gold medal in judo. Wyatt Sanford won a bronze, and that was first Olympic medal in boxing in 28 years. Diving, we won our first ever bronze medals. And then rugby, remember Canada just went wild in the rugby seven. They upset France. They shocked Australia. They almost beat New Zealand, and they win silver, which is their best ever. So there's a lot of best ever performances. But I think what's cool about it is there are more unique sports that we've never had success in. And maybe that's opening the gateway to saying that maybe we don't need to win the big 100 meter or soccer or basketball, but we can find other places to leave our imprint. So it kind of depends how you look at it.
And we are 100%. We are. And those athletes deserve all their recognition, of course, but And it's not like you're like pulling those anywhere. This is what's happened, and Canada's had a very good Olympics so far. But was everyone around for those moments?
Well, I think the thing is nobody was really expecting
because they
these
came
moments.
Out of nowhere a little
right.
bit. And but to be truly lasting, mm-hmm. there's anticipation and then there's delivering on that moment.
Definitely.
And I think with the exception of summer, we haven't had that yet.
Well, there's more to come.
There is more to come. Thankfully.
Okay, we're going to talk here with Kate Van Buskirk of CBC and an Olympian herself joining us. Kate, we were just watching you on the screen a couple hours ago while we were watching the drama in the 500 meters. So what happened there? Because we need you to kind of break this down for us, because there's shoving, there's a medal that's being awarded and taken away, and I know this is one of your specialties. So walk us through the drama in that 500-meter final. Or 5,000, sorry, 5,000. Yeah.
That's right. So great to be with you guys. Yeah, that 5,000 was absolutely wild. It was pegged as one of the greatest showdowns in women's distance history, and it delivered that way. But then, of course, the drama happened a few minutes after the finish line when Faith Kipyegon, who is the former world record holder at this event, she's the defending world champion. She was the one to beat. She comes second to her countrywoman, Chebet, who took the sort of sneaky surprise gold. And Faith Kipyegon ends up getting disqualified. And the reason was that she impeded another runner, the Ethiopian Gudaf Sege. So essentially there was a clip where she was running, you know, around one of the turns, and Sege's arm came across Kipyegon, and Kipyegon grabbed it, seemingly out of frustration, to sort of push her away and say, you know, stop impeding me. And that was evidently the clip that the referees used to disqualify Faith Kipyegon. So, Olympic silver medalist gets DQ'd, and that is, I don't know of a time that that's happened before, especially for that reason. It's unprecedented. Kenya did appeal, but unfortunately, we've heard that appeal was denied. So it does sound as though she is booted out of those results.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fascinating event. And of course, as Ailish mentioned, you've ran it. It feels like one of the more unique events, just like in the Olympics in general, because you are performing this athletic feat, but it also seems like there's loads of strategy involved. So just in terms of the 5,000, how much different is it than other track and athletics events? And is it one of the more... I'll let you finish that sentence. Like, what makes it so unique compared to others? Because it looks different, and you can actually see some strategy playing out while these athletes are at the top of their game.
That's a great question. And strategy is totally at play in the 5,000 meter. It's considered sort of like the longest of the mid-distance races or the shortest of the distance races. And for that reason, two things are almost always true. One is that you're getting sort of the great meeting middle spot of the faster 1,500 meter runners and the longer, stronger 10,000 meter runners. So the 5,000 is really this sort of, you know, intermediary between those two, like, speed and distance events. So you're going to get tactics at play where athletes are utilizing each of those strengths to their advantage. And then also, it's one of these events that really draws some of the best from every country in the world. So you do get, you know, you see certain events that tend to be dominated by like one sort of region of the world or another. The 1500 and the 5000, you kind of get everyone. So it's one of the deepest events globally as well. In terms of the tactics, what I thought was so interesting is that the team tactics were really at play, and we didn't really get to talk about that too much. But you can qualify up to 3 people per country for each event in athletics at the Olympics. And then, of course, those athletes have to get through the rounds. We had in this final 3 Americans, 3 Ethiopians, and 3 Kenyans. So basically 2/3 of the race was made up by 3 countries. And we saw those team tactics at play. And I think that, you know, just going back to the DQ, like, there is this great rivalry between Kenya and Ethiopia, and the Kenyans were all packed together. And then you had that Ethiopian kind of strong arming one of the favorites, the Kenyan. So I can't help but imagine that probably went into it as well in terms of the retaliation from Faith Kipyegon. But again, a historic event, unprecedented in terms of the DQ, and really cool for Battaglietti, the Italian, to, if she does get bumped up from 4th to 3rd, that will be only the 2nd time that a woman from her country has ever been on the podium in the 5,000 meter at the Olympics. So good for her.
So how much of a disadvantage is there then if you're the only racer from your country in a final like that? Like, is it, I think the Dutch racer who was the defending Olympic champion, I'm not sure if there was another Dutch woman in the race, but she looked like she was sort of on an island compared to everyone else. Are you at a major disadvantage when you don't have a teammate out there with you?
Yeah, and it sort of depends on, you never know how those team tactics are going to come into play. So Safwan Hassan is the Dutch woman that you're referencing. She's actually Ethiopian born and then moved to the Netherlands when she was 15. And so I think she, you know, she's been at the world stage for such a long time that she really is able to read the room well. Like, she knows how to navigate her way through. She's actually notorious for going to the very back of the pack in every single race and then unleashing this monster kick over the final 400 meters. And I think some of that is self-preservation. She gets out of the way of all of the madness and some of the kind of strong-arming tactics that happen in front of her, like we saw today. And she really keeps her powder clean and is able to, you know, make her move when it works for her to be able to get to the front. I actually raced Faith Kipyegon at the 2014 Commonwealth Games. She won gold in the 1500 meters. I was a distant bronze, but there were three Kenyans in that race as well. And they basically played out very similar team tactics up front. And it was fascinating to watch it unfold because they essentially, you know, it's kind of like in a cycling race. They essentially have that one person that goes to the lead and almost sort of sacrifices themselves sometimes for the advantage of the other athletes competing. It's been interesting to watch, and it changes with each games. But I will say I would rather have teammates than not in a situation like that.
I bet. So during this 5,000 meter final, the pole vault, men's pole vault final is also going on. And that was electric. You know, first of all, pole vault in its own, we were watching this, and I think Justin and I both agreed that'd be the last sport I could ever stomach even attempting. Just even running at this mat full speed with a pole, I can't do that. And we see Mondo Magic, the Swede, sets another World Olympic record himself, and he just keeps going and going after he's won the gold. So, like, walk us through what watching that is like, knowing the stakes, hearing that stadium too, coming through the broadcast. It's unbelievable. And knowing that you've already won the gold, but you just want to keep breaking records and everyone watching and cheering you on as you do it.
Well, I'm not a field eventer, so I can't speak from personal experience, but I've been in the stadium trying to compose myself for the start of a race when all of that electricity is happening around you. And I got to say, it's sometimes a little distracting. I would say more than anything, it's just super motivating because you can kind of pretend that the stadium is cheering for you. This is the beautiful sort of range of track and field, right? Because in almost every track race, you have either team tactics at play, or at least you have other bodies around you where you're competing directly against your competitor. In the field events, it's one person going at a time. So all eyes are on that person. And to your point, you know, you can already have the gold medal locked up and then you're just going after a record. And I think there's a different energy that comes from that when all eyes are on you. You have nothing to lose at that point. Which can also be really difficult to have to gather yourself and say, look, I'm now a two-time gold medalist at the Olympics, and I'm going to try to get after a world record. I'm tired, and I've spent a lot of, you know, emotional and mental energy even getting to this point, but now I'm going to try to break a world record. I said this to Scott Russell earlier, but I mean, the crowd went crazy. There are 80,000 people in that stadium in France, and every single one of them turned up in a huge way to cheer on for Mondo Magic. And again, like, two-time Olympic champion now, multiple-time world record holder, and he reacted as if he had just set the world record for the first time, just won his first Olympic medal. It was amazing to see what it meant to him and sort of how the athlete and the spectators play off each other in that moment.
Yeah, it's cool how the competitors become spectators too and are cheering for the world record to go down or for him to complete the last jump. It was a pretty cool scene today.
Sorry to interrupt, but you saw Sam Kendricks, the American who won the bronze medal. Yeah. There are a couple shots where Mondo is getting set to go down the runway, and Kendricks is in the background basically, like, talking through, I think, Mondo steps. Like, he is so engaged and so committed to Mondo's success, even though this man has just beaten him on the world stage. He's literally, like, almost like a stage mom, you know, like walking through the
You're
steps.
You're doing great, sweetie.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. And I'm sure that's what he was saying at the end of it. It was really cool to watch.
When it becomes unanimous like that in terms of support, it's pretty cool. And that's what we saw today. We're talking to Kate Van Busker of CBC and a former Olympian, of course. Okay, let's talk about Canada a little bit. We've had some ups and downs when it comes to track and field so far. The ups, though, centered around throwers. So, Kate, are we a throwing nation now?
I think that after you win a gold medal from a 22-year-old who wasn't even on the scene in the last Olympics, you can absolutely say that we're a throwing nation, and that's not even taking into account the throwers that we have yet to come. So I'll get to those in a moment, but Ethan Katzberg, I mean, comes away with the first gold medal ever in the hammer throw for Canada. You referenced this earlier, but, you know, the last time that a medal was won was 1912. We won bronze in 1908, silver in 1912. Over a century has gone by since we put a Canadian at the top of the podium in this event. And he made it look easy. First throw, 84-12. It was that throw would have won every single Olympic final, with the exception of the 1988 games where the world record or the Olympic record was set. So he just kind of shows up, gets the job done, and then has a pretty good second throw and then fouls his next four. And he's like, who cares? I got the medal. I threw, far and away the best, a 5-meter advantage over the rest of the field. And then we've got so much to look forward to in terms of our women throwers, too. I'll make a quick note. We won 6 medals in Tokyo and they were all guys. Mm-hmm. So I am here for the gals. I'm wearing the pink pants, showing up for the women. And I think we're going to have a couple of women really giving a good shot at the podium, pardon the pun, because they are Cameron Rogers in the women's hammer throw, defending world champion, and Sarah Mitten in the shot put. She was silver at the world championships last year and is just gunning for a medal. And, you know, we're seeing a bit of a turning of the tide. We haven't had the success coming out of Tokyo that we would have liked from those medalists so far, but I think we're going to see Canada is a throwing nation, and we're going to see some really great things moving forward.
I love that. And Ethan looks like a guy that I want to grab a beer with. Like, he looks like the biggest beauty as well. So he was doing, everyone was really proud of that, and it was awesome to watch that first throw, and then he wins the gold, and that
looks, looks like a guy who could get his John Montgomery on and do the full beer walking down the Olympic Village. And
I hope we see more content from him. Yeah, he looked like an absolute beauty. Okay, so we'll go from, I guess, the exciting to the maybe disappointing, but we'll both spin. Andre de Grasse missing the 100-meter final there. The disappointment on that, and then knowing that you have a big race, the 200-meter final or semi and hopefully final to come. Like, the balance of that, knowing that you wanted to be in something, but you need to refocus quickly to be in something that you are really, really good at. How much of a struggle would that be for an athlete, just weighing the excitement and the negativity and disappointment at a time like this when there isn't much time to regroup?
And I think that this is partly where you're seeing the experience of our team show. So I use this as a reference point for Damian Warner, who I know we'll get to in the decathlon. But Damian, you know, oldest man in the field. And when you have 10 events, you have to do one. And whatever the result was, you have to let it go immediately because you have to focus so quickly on the next thing to come. And for our male sprinter, well, for any of our sprinters, that's true, where, you know, you have potentially 3 rounds of each of your events. So just to put that in context, when Andre won 3 medals in Tokyo, he did 9 races to get those 3 medals because you have 3 rounds of each of those events. So I think Andre, you know, he's been on the scene for a long time. He won bronze in Rio. He won bronze in Tokyo in the 100. Definitely a bummer not to have him on that final, but that was also the deepest men's final in the 100 that we've ever seen. I mean, it was 0.12 seconds separating first from eighth. That has never happened before. It was so hard to even call the winner. And, you know, Andre ran a season's best in his semifinal and still didn't make it through. So he's running really well. It's just the event is so elevated. And he absolutely knows how to just let that go, refocus on the 200, which is his better event anyway, and also save a little something for the 4x1, because our men's 4x1 have turned up over and over again. Those 4 guys, including Aaron Brown, who unfortunately was DQ'd in the heats of the 100, those 4 guys have been together since Rio. They won bronze in Rio, silver in Tokyo, and they are absolutely a medal threat. So I think Andre, just like many of our athletes, is going from event to event and just saying, that one's done. there's nothing I can do about it. And, you know, like I said, he's better at the 200 anyway, so we should expect to see him in that final and gunning for a podium spot.
Yeah, the DeGrasse story, not completed yet, of course, but it is a fascinating sort of case study because we've seen the full DeGrasse story play out at the Olympics, right? Like the pictures of him and Usain Bolt in 2016. Of course, he has the big moments in 2021 as well. But how hard it might be to be an athlete who knows, and maybe this isn't true with DeGrasse, but it is true with many and might be true with Damian Warner, Aaron Brown, et cetera, where you know your best is in the past, but you're still on the best stage, on the world stage. Like, is it easier because, hey, maybe the pressure's off a little bit? Is it harder because, yeah, you just don't feel like you're at that level that you could be? Like, when it goes into the psyche of a track athlete at the end of their career, is it more difficult or is it easier?
Well, as a multiple-time, you know, Olympic and World Championship medalist, no, I'm not. But I can speak to a little bit of experience. You know, as I mentioned, in 2014, I won a bronze medal for Canada at the Commonwealth Games in the 1500 meter, and that was relatively early in my career. And the difficult piece mentally from there was now I have a piece of hardware, right? Like I've tasted what it's like to be on the podium at the global level. And I think that in sport, one of the difficult things, especially in an individual sport, is that you are always defined by your last event. So if your last race or your last performance, your last showing at a Worlds or an Olympic Championships was on a podium, or especially in a, you know, a gold medal position, anything short of that is going to be considered a failure by a lot of people. And that is a difficult thing to turn off mentally, to turn off the noise and just focus on what you need to do to get the job done and do it to the best of your ability, whatever that is in the moment. So, you know, I think for, again, a guy like Andre, he's, as I mentioned, he's so experienced. He's been on the scene for a long time. He must have known coming in that this was going to be a really difficult 100 final to make. And yet he, like I said, is going to be able to just put that aside and focus on the 200. And also really turn off a lot of that noise. You have to find a way to put the blinders on and just focus on getting the job done to the best of your ability and not listen to the critics or the haters and then use the energy of the stadium when you have it.
Yeah. I'm not a decathlon or a decathlon etiquette expert, but I was a little surprised to see Damian Warner, you know, not complete the decathlon or to pull out of it. Is that, you know, normal for a decathlete who can't win and doesn't complete the actual event, or am I reading a little bit too much into it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it really varies athlete by athlete. I would say that, you know, I think Damian and his team probably had a good conversation about that and were doing what was right to protect his mental health in that moment. Mm. This was devastating for him. And, you know, we had Michael Smith, former decathlete, great in Canada, on the call there live with the commentators. And he said the same thing. This would be a devastating moment for Damian. I think he and his team made that call, and whatever the call was the right decision. So I don't think there was any sort of love lost or slight to the other competitors by not finishing. I think he always puts country first, always puts family first, always wants to turn up for the people in his life that have gotten him here. So if he had had it in him to finish, he certainly would have. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he didn't, I have all the respect for him, because it just shows how much he wanted this and what a tough blow it was to not be able to finish.
Most definitely. Kate, before we let you go, we're getting some tweets from Kenya's Olympic page that the appeal was successful, and so the silver will belong to Kenya's athlete. So there you go. Breaking news.
Unbelievable.
Appealing an appeal.
Thanks for breaking that for
there
me.
There you
that
go.
That is so fantastic.
That's great. I wanted to be sure that we had it from the right accounts, and it looks like the appeal was successful. So that's a good, excellent, happy ending to that. Well, you know, there was a lot of elbowing going on, so just let everyone race, you know?
That's right.
I agree.
Very cool.
Well, I appreciate your time. This was really great to catch up. Enjoy the rest of the Olympics. I'm sure we'll be seeing you lots, and we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks so much. Great to chat with you.
Thanks so much. That's Kate Van Buskirk, CBC, and a former Olympian as well. Yeah, so looking like we're getting the confirmation that the appeal was successful in
there
that 5,000 meter. Yeah. Get your elbows up.
Get the elbows up. You're a decorated former collegiate athlete. So you played hockey at a high level. You know goalies. Goalies are a little bit weird, a little bit different, right? In general experience.
Yeah, they're usually the weirdest.
Played hockey at my level. You know that goalies are a little weird. I wonder, when we were watching the pole vaulting, are these the weirdest track athletes, the pole vaulters? Because they're doing something that's just, like, you got to be a little crazy to even start that. So I feel like, you know, the track community, they all hang out. They're all training in the same general vicinity.
Yeah.
Are the pole vaulters the weird ones? I think I need that answered by someone.
I mean, looking at the hammer throw squad, like, they look like they
I think they're the social committee, yeah.
They're
the throwers are the social committee.
The party goers, the party bringers.
The cool ones are the sprinters.
Yes, definitely.
And I think the pole vaulters are a little...
Well, what about steeplechase? You know that one where you jump over and you land in the water? Like, that's a little crazy.
That's you got to, like, toweling down. Yeah. Like, you got to be okay with that process.
You're just sopping wet running around the track.
Every day. It's fun. All day.
Okay, so we got a couple minutes here before we take a break. We'll talk to Ben Lewis. Big one tomorrow. I know we're the fan pregame. We're technically pregaming Canada versus France.
Sure.
Men's basketball tomorrow. That's obviously a win. You need this one for Canada. They're 3-0 in the group of death. And they're facing France, who's the host nation. So what do we have in store tomorrow?
Yeah, you need to win. If you win, you play for a medal eventually, whether it is bronze or for gold, advancing past the quarterfinal. France is a good team, though. This kind of feels... Right. I mean, maybe Canada a little hard done by the fact that they went 3-0 group of death, but they are where they are in the tournament. The winner will likely draw Germany, which will be tough as well. Canada beat up on France at the FIBAs last summer. They did beat them in pre-tournament competition, but I feel like this is an interesting setup for Canada. The French in France.
There's a little home advantage at times, whether it's crowd or...
And maybe the best player in the world. In Victor Wembanyama, like, I know he hasn't proven that at the NBA level yet, but like, if we're talking about the timeline and where things are headed, like, it might be Wemby at this point. And also, Canada's weaknesses kind of play into France's strengths in some ways. Like, they got all those bigs, and Canada's struggled rebounding, and they've had struggle from beyond the three-point line. So I think it's going to be tight. I think it's going to be interesting. I think Canada wins. I think France might cover the 7.5. I think Canada wins a close game.
See a close game.
My best bet will be France 7.5. Can hit the happiness hedge plus Canada wins.
Yep.
I just think this one, like, that's a big line.
It is.
For beating the host nation in a huge game with Victor Wembanyama on the other side. I think Canada gets it done, but I think it's going to be tight.
Okay, I like that. That'll be a fun one tomorrow. I think who did they play, Spain last game?
Yeah. It seems like it was a week ago.
I know.
There's a lot of rest. Like, Felix Auger-Aliassime plays every day.
He played like four tennis matches in 12 hours.
And I feel like I've been waiting for a basketball game forever.
But it's nice. They'll be well rested. And advantage to Canada, because we learned French, so they can't be sneaky. Speaking in French, we'll know it.
There you go.
That grade 4-8 French.
We'll see. I don't know how, like, bilingual Dylan Brooks is, but I guess we can hope
they studied from grade 4 to 9, and then we'll know some words. Okay, my best bet, and you'll get it if you've looked at what's going on with the stock market today.
Is it in a bad place?
Nick Castellanos to hit a home run. This guy hits a home run whenever something major is happening in the world. You can look it up. Like, it's actually spooky.
Okay.
He's now the most bet home run of the day because everyone's jumping on board with the Castellanos. I don't know if it's magic or voodoo or juju.
I think closer to voodoo.
Yeah. Obviously, there's some stuff going on in the world, and Castellanos probably hit a home run tonight. So
there you go.
There's your best bet, plus 700.
We were also looking as well at just the odds for this basketball tournament. I think it was like 7-1 Canada win the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And of course, the U.S. is a huge minus price. But if you like Canada win the whole thing, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is 13-1 to win MVP. And I guess there's a world where he can win MVP and Canada gets a silver medal, but probably not. But I mean, if they're going to win this tournament, Shai has to be Shai, which means 13-1 is a better price than 7-1. So if you do like Canada, maybe there's reason to. Shai, MVP, 13-1. I think there are worse bets than that.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. Ben Lewis of Tennis Canada is going to join us. The MBO is starting here in Toronto and in Montreal. The women here, the men in Montreal. We got a lot of big names still in it, even though it is an Olympic year. We'll go through the field and how Canada will shake out. And then we're going to close the show looking at what is still to come in the Paris Olympics, power rank the remaining events, and see where your interest lies. That's all next on the Fan Pregame.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan Pregame. Happy Holiday Monday. We're grinding. I was down at the National Bank Open.
Two jobs on a holiday for you.
You're right. I was working two jobs today. I was checking out the scene in Toronto at York Sobeys Stadium, I believe, and checking in. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a great week, week and a half, 2 weeks. They play forever. You got to get yourself down there.
I got time to, because it is, you know, National Bank Open.
So make it happen.
It's just a week and a bit.
Covering it for Tennis Canada and more is Ben Lewis, who joins us now. Ben, how's it going?
It's going really well. How are you guys doing?
I was just there today. I didn't see you. You're in Toronto, I assume.
Yes, I am. I am in Toronto. I wish I'd been able to spend a little more time on the grounds today. I was often in a media booth, but had the chance to speak to a lot of players. Bianca, Layla all came through today. We had Coco Gauff, Naomi Osaka, Ons Jabeur. So some of these best players, and a lot of them who've made the trek over from Paris because they wrapped up competition at the Olympics, obviously, and now moving into our North American hard court swing, which is a huge part of the tennis season. So really, we're a pretty key stop before that last Grand Slam of the season with the U.S. Open just around the corner.
I was reffing a PWHL and WTA full,
I'm surprised the
hockey
full,
game.
The full media throng wasn't
but,
there.
But I was surprised to see a great showing, and I was reffing, so I allowed the WTA girls to win because I was like, you know what, I don't want to have bad...
Wait, you gamed the results?
Yeah, I gamed the results. I didn't want there to be, you know, bad negative energy around such a great tournament, and I was impressed to see that there's a lot of women stars still here. So let's focus on the Toronto side about just some of the big names that have decided to come. Some haven't because of the Paris Olympics, but it looks like it's a bit more star-studded in Toronto.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Coco Gauff is the number one seed here and obviously the U.S. Open champion from last season. Mm-hmm. So that's a marquee star beyond just her great marketability. She's so watchable. She's just a fantastic athlete. So that's must-watch viewing if you get down to the tournament to see Coco. Aryna Sabalenka, she actually missed the Olympics due to injury, but she's back and healthy. She's the number two, and she's a two-time Australian Open champion, so she's fantastic. And I think, look, she's not seeded at this event, but we know Bianca Andreescu is an incredible draw, and we know she plays some of her best tennis in front of a home crowd. I mean, it was kind of her breakout moment on the big stage 5 years ago when she won this event, and later, just a few weeks later, won the U.S. Open. So I think it's huge for her to be back and healthy after all the issues she's had the past couple of seasons. So great opportunity for fans to see her and Layla as well, who's been playing some good tennis of late on the grass, on the clay, and now over to the hard courts.
It's interesting. You mentioned Sabalenka wasn't healthy enough to play in Paris, but healthy enough for the National Bank Open. The same with Jannik Sinner, who pulled out of the Olympics with tonsillitis, which is a little strange to me that these athletes weren't able to go a week ago. But now, but that's obviously the National Bank Open's gain. But just let's talk for a moment just about how the Olympics have affected this year's tournament, right? I mean, there's a lot of the women's tournament is definitely strong. Clearly, the men's tournament took a big of a hit here with Alcaraz not being able to come and Djokovic as well. Listen, it only happens every 4 years, and it's not the biggest deal in the world, but clearly Olympics has had some effect here on this tournament, but I guess the extent of it is what, Ben?
Yeah, it's something that we have to brace for, I think, every 4 years with this tournament and the scheduling. In terms of the damage to the women's tournament, we lost 7 of the top 10. I think, you know, one of the biggest losses, obviously, Iga Świątek. She's world number one. That's something I think we almost prepared for because, first of all, she's so fantastic on clay. She was, of course, a heavy favorite in Paris to win gold or at least medal. That's something she did. She won bronze. You think of Qinwen Zheng, who's a fantastic player, just won gold for China, for her country in tennis. And we were also kind of bracing for the expectation. Someone has just poured their heart and soul into a tournament in Paris on the Olympic stage. How are they really going to recover mentally, physically, fly back over to Canada for a new event on the turn like that immediately? So, you know, yes, we lost a couple marquee names. Jasmine Paolini, another who's a two-time Grand Slam finalist, she made a bit of a run in Paris in doubles, so weren't able to get her. But honestly, there's some still marquee names. I mean, Naomi Osaka, for example, we didn't have her last year. She's a four-time Grand Slam champion. Ons Jabeur is back and healthy, and that's a first-round match, for example. Mm-hmm. So there's, like, world-class tennis right around the corner here still, despite the loss.
It seems like there's just there's more variability to the women's top 10, I suppose, and maybe this is year we're 7 of the top 10, but there's still massive, massive names that Coach Naomi Osaka hasn't played a ton of tennis lately. Not going to be in the top 10, but a bigger name than most in the top 10. It does open the door, I suppose, on both sides for an outlier winner, which is fun. If you were going to sort of pinpoint an outlier potential winner for each, who would they be?
That's a good question. Outlier winner. So, I mean, ranking-wise, Bianca Andreescu right now is an outlier. Why not her? I mean, she's been playing good tennis, I think. She's been close her last couple Grand Slams. She lost to the eventual finalist in Jasmine Paolini, and I think she plays some of her best tennis on the hard courts. So, to me, like, the storyline there would be the most special one, to have Bianca win this 5 years after winning it in Toronto at her home event. I honestly think both Bianca and Layla are dangerous. And, yeah, Naomi Osaka is an outlier as well. You know, just overlook her ranking completely. The type of tennis she can play when she's on a hard court in particular. I mean, she pushed Iga Swiatek to the brink at the French Open earlier this season in the second round, nearly beat her, and Iga went on to win her fourth career French Open title. So you think if she was playing that well on the clay, are we going to see a different type of level on hard courts? She's kind of the name I have my eye on the most, I think, to see how she fares in that first round and how she looks.
We're chatting with Ben Lewis of Tennis Canada, head of the MBO. I want to go back to Layla. She's 25th, I think, right now in the world. Went to Olympic round of 16. She's technically our highest, best chance for a Canadian on the woman's side. She's also playing doubles with her sister, which I think is really sweet. What does this mean to her? I know she's been a really proud Canadian. You saw her at the Olympics, and she's Lululemon gear. Like, she's so sweet when she talks about her relationship. What? She's really lovely. I love Lululemon, and I love Layla. But she is so patriotic about Canada. So obviously this event means a lot to her, and the additional part of playing doubles with her sister. Like, what's this week in store for her?
I think it's one of the most special weeks on the calendar for her. And you're right. She really plays some of her best tennis when she's repping the red and white. You look at what she did last year for Canada on the Billie Jean King Cup stage. I mean, she took over that event, and that led to history for our country, our first Billie Jean King Cup title ever in tennis. So I expect her to bring it. I mean, she played great in Montreal last season. I think she lost in the round of 16, but she had a couple electric wins. I think she upset the Brazilian Beatriz Haddad-Maia there. She feeds off that crowd energy, and really, similarly to Bianca, who had her breakout stage in 2019 in the summer hard courts, Layla did the same thing in 2021 when she made the finals of the U.S. Open, and she fed off the New York crowd there. I think the Toronto crowd is going to embrace her tomorrow night. She's the headline for the night session, so it's going to be fantastic. And for me, if she just gets that momentum into her rhythm from the back of the court, because she can play so well moving forward too, she's capable of a run.
We're chatting with Ben Lewis, who's covering the National Bank Open presented by Rogers in Toronto this week. But I want to shift to Montreal for a second, Ben, and I guess to Paris a little bit too. I mean, Felix Auger-Aliassime, from a tennis standpoint, was the story at the Olympic Games. Do you have a theory why his best tennis comes with a Canadian flag on his shirt?
I'm sure he'd like a theory to that as well. I'm not sure why, but it's great when the Olympics are rolling around and he's playing this well, and obviously it's great when Davis Cup comes around and he's playing this well. Felix really struggled in 2023. We know he got to the top 10 in 2022, and I think when we see tennis players have that breakout and ascent, we think they're going to continue to rise, and this sport is so challenging, as you know, on a week-to-week basis. From a competitive standpoint, just being one-on-one, that you can have dips. And 2023 was a really frustrating one for Felix. So I think for Paris, especially this past week and a half, that was, to me, the Felix of 2022 that was world number six. He played some incredible tennis, beat some top 10 players. He beat Casper Ruud in three sets, who's a monster on the clay. He beat Daniil Medvedev for the first time in his career. And then he got a bronze medal for his country in doubles with Gabby Dabrowski, who's one of the best doubles players in the world. So I'm hoping Felix can carry over that momentum into Montreal. Toronto, he struggled last year, but at that time he was just struggling in general with a knee injury, not playing his best. Now he's playing his best again, and he'll have that momentum, you know, feeding into the hard court season where he really tends to up his game.
If we're talking about Paris, I got to ask you about Djokovic's gold medal moment. I mean, that was the final thing on his resume that needed to be completed. And I've never seen so much emotion from Djokovic. It was clear that meant so much to him and his family and his country. beating Alcaraz. Like, I love that head-to-head that those two have. But watching Djokovic, whether you love the guy or not, seeing that emotion, I think was really special to see at the Olympics.
Absolutely incredible. I mean, to think at age 37, I thought this was one of the best performances of his career. Mm-hmm. All that's at stake, ultimately, we kind of know it was his last shot at gold, and completing a career Golden Slam with, he's now just one of five players to ever do it, win all four majors and win an Olympic gold medal. Roger Federer never even managed to do that. And I think just that release of emotion, something that he's probably been chasing for the better part of two decades. Rafa beat him in 2008 in a crucial semifinal match, got his gold then in singles, and now 16 years later for Novak to still be at the peak of this sport, to put up a performance like that against, to me, the most electric player in the world in tennis right now, Carlos Alcaraz, was astounding. And I think a reminder that he's not just probably the greatest tennis athlete of all time, one of the greatest athletes, I think, of our generation.
Well said. Looking forward to seeing some more of that emotion from Toronto and Montreal at the National Bank Open. Ben, we appreciate you taking the time. I know it's been a busy stretch. It is only getting started, so we'll chat with you on the other end of it, and enjoy.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. That's Ben Lewis of Tennis Canada and Matchpoint Canada co-host. And we are getting started here with the National Bank Open in Toronto and Montreal. The women here in Toronto and men in Montreal.
Well, I said you're going down. Are you going to go to center court when it's Bianca or Layla or someone else? Who would you want to see?
Ooh, I mean, currently I have tickets to a day where I don't know who would be in it. Okay,
I thought you just had like the general win. Oh, it's a semifinal.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fun. Okay, you had to put someone in a semifinal to watch.
I want to see Layla.
Live.
I really like Layla.
Okay.
As I said, and the company. But here's the disclaimer to that. I saw Bianca when it was the Rogers Cup here, and it was a center court nighttime show. The lights were on, and I got to see Bianca. I don't remember if she won or lost the match, which is probably not a good sign.
Was it 5 years ago?
Yeah.
She won that.
Well, it wasn't the final.
Well, to get to the final, she must have won.
I don't know how many years ago it was. It might have been less than 5 years ago.
Okay.
It was within the last couple years. Regardless, I saw her, and I thought that was a really awesome moment to see Bianca in one of her prime moments in Toronto. So I would like to see Layla because I haven't seen her play, and I think she's great.
There you go. Okay, that's fair. I like it. You'll have fun.
Now I need to find out when it was because I need to know. It'll be this weekend I'm going to go.
Okay.
Who would you want to see?
It kind of depends on the spot.
Mm. Well, yeah, if it's a semi-final, I'll see whoever.
I feel like Bianca has more boom or bust. And I guess if it's a semifinal, the boom is happening, mm-hmm. which means there might be a better chance. Like, I feel like she's got the breakthrough potential because we've seen it before. But maybe those days are past Bianca. Maybe that's where Layla's going instead of where she was. So maybe Layla's the right answer. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Bianca provided this country with a truly great sports moment, and I have not seen her live in my life. And I think it'd be cool to watch her win a big match, but I don't know. Maybe Layla's the better chance for a win.
I would be happy to see anybody. So
and
hope
you
that they make it through. Okay, so yeah, this is kicking off here in Toronto. There's already some qualifying today. Okay, so with swimming, we talked about this at the beginning of the show, looking at kind of the midway-ish plus point of the Olympics. Canada's got 17 medals. They're in 11th place, 5 gold, 4 silver, 8 bronze. Not right on the cusp of what they did last Summer Olympics in Tokyo. They had 24 medals. Don't think it would take a lot for them to catch up.
It's very possible.
They've already made history in multiple facets in terms of like winning their first ever blank medal. A lot of first time qualifiers for the Olympics as well. We know Summer McIntosh has headlined it. But there's still some tennis. There's still some Olympics to come. So what do you want to see?
Yeah, and I guess with my take here is that I think we need something big. I think we had chapter one with Summer, and I'm looking here for a chapter two. And I think this is sort of the potential. And if we're power ranking the events, I think we should do it together. These are the main ones that we've identified down the stretch here. We got Canada basketball, clearly. Tomorrow, quarterfinal versus France. They could play as many as two more matches beyond that, and we'll see how far they go. We've got breaking. We've heard about Phil Wizard since the start of these Olympics. I still haven't seen Phil Wizard compete, and I want to do that. So maybe Phil Wizard can provide one of those moments. We mentioned it earlier. We're throwing nation. We've got Cameron Rogers throwing in the hammer throw tomorrow. women's golf starts tomorrow as well. Brooke Henderson, of course, has a great opportunity to place, to maybe win a medal. She's top five in the shortest odds. We got beach volleyball quarterfinals tomorrow with Spain. We got men's and women's 4x100 relay. We mentioned that a little bit earlier with Andre DeGrasse, maybe saving himself for that. But he's also got the 200-meter final Thursday. So of those seven, and maybe we're missing one, what's number one for you in terms of what you need and must watch?
Yeah, there's certainly a couple more, like, there's a couple more finals to come. I'm surprised you didn't mention equestrian since you think you could compete.
I don't think it can provide that lasting moment, personally.
If you saw Snoop Dogg's outfit, if you were wearing that, things would be different on this show.
I feel a little justified in my decision that NBC is trotting Snoop Dogg out there to do some equestrian.
Did you see he's getting paid $500,000 a day?
Are you serious?
You didn't hear this?
My God.
Snoop Dogg's getting paid $500,000 a day plus expenses to help promote the Olympics.
I mean, I guess he's doing a decent job. Is it working, though? Like, I mean, that's a lot of money. Like, it doesn't matter to NBC because they're clearly
throwing
around tons
of money. Oh, I don't know if they're paying him. Somebody's paying him.
Oh, it must be him, right? I've heard people are not happy with his role.
Who are you talking to there?
I've just heard a couple people talk about it.
Brittany McLean? Better not be.
I'll tell you what, I'm happy with Brittany McLean's role. She's been brilliant for CBC.
Okay, back to it. If you don't want to pick an equestrian because... I think the easy answer is what Canada basketball does. We talked about it.
So you're with me.
Yeah. I mean, it's it's Team Canada. Yeah. It's like the thing that also has a couple more events hopefully to come, right? It's not a one-off thing right now. We want to see them play France, and then they'd have semis and then a final. Mm-hmm. And so that's a lot of basketball. That's a lot of opportunity to watch Shea and RJ and Dylan Brooks and to see potentially, if things work out, them and the United States in a gold medal final. Like, that could be the crowning moment of our Summer Olympics, minus summer, possibly, depends how you view it.
And we have, like, things that kind of the trait characteristics of a Canadian sport fan there are many things, right? But I think one that we love is, and we relish the opportunity to go head-to-head
against the United
States. David versus Goliath,
Let's go.
Like, if we get to that point, that would be the most anticipated moment of the Olympics if there's a gold medal match featuring Canada basketball against the United States. So number one, we're together on this one, Canada basketball. You go ahead.
I'm going to go with Brooke Henderson and women's golf because she's, as you said, top five in odds to win. She tees off on Thursday. The hours were hard to watch because it kind of starts pretty early. But we saw Corey Connors in the top 10. Obviously, Brooke is like she's our girl, okay? Brooke Brigade, I'm a proud member of it. I want to see what she does. She has a really great opportunity at winning a medal at the gold at the Olympics. I want to see her do it.
Yeah, I think that would be definitely a great story to end the Olympics because it starts tomorrow, four rounds. Like, we're going to be right at the end there. If Brooke Henderson finds a way to get us a golf medal to win the event, it would be awesome. I think very, very close behind that in terms of intrigue, though, at least for me.
Breaking.
No.
Come on.
We have an Olympic legend.
I understand.
We have an Olympic legend for Canada in Andre DeGrasse.
I know.
Andre DeGrasse. 8 years ago with Usain Bolt, that's one of the pictures of the Olympics, literally picture with him, them two smiling
He's
at each other.
He's got to get to the final first.
He's a defending gold medalist. Mm-hmm. That is as high stakes, I think, as it gets. Maybe I'm just a little reticent to believe that he can do it based on what we saw at the 100. But Andre DeGrasse, if he reaches the final in the 200, he competes well in the semifinal, and there's a real legitimate chance. It's like the final piece for one of Canada's greatest Olympians. And for that reason, DeGrasse has to be high on this list.
Okay, we got to speed through the next couple ones.
You can put Phil Wizard there.
No, I'm kidding. I definitely
agree.
Yes, I agree with Andre DeGrasse.
No, but fourth. I think you put Phil Wizard.
Fourth? No, I still want to see the relay. Like, men's and women's 400-meter relay. I love a track event. I love the 100. Like, that, the speed of it, the intensity of it, the arena going crazy for it. I would like to see that as well, and we have a great opportunity at a medal there. Maybe then I'll put breaking. It's the debut. We got Phil Wizard. Yeah. Like, the guy's a world champion. Nobody knows what to expect.
I'll put Phil Wizard fourth on my list.
There we go.
Because I think there's a better opportunity to potentially win a gold.
Okay, so breaking. I got to put women's hammer throw in there. We're a throwing nation, too.
We're doing top five, and that'd be six.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were ranking all the remaining ones. That's why I was speaking.
Okay, you can go.
Beach volleyball. I want to see it all, okay?
Yeah, big upset for beach volleyball, but are they going to win a gold? I'm not really sure.
They beat USA.
I think, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Basketball, then golf, then the track events, and then Phil Wizard's been the guy everyone's been waiting for. So, yeah, he would be rounding out the top five in terms of intrigue for the final few days.
There's lots of fun to come.
Yeah.
And it's not and it's not over yet.
It's not all doom and gloom. I'm just saying, we need one more thing in between these five. I think it's going
to happen. If we get something out of that five, we already have had a great, but we'll have an even greater.
An even better one.
Trey Bien from Perry.
There you go.
I'm basically there. All right, that was fun. We're sending you off into the evening, into not much, but we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great night, everyone.
See ya.
Happy Holiday Monday.